Earth Eats is a production of WFIU and Indiana Public Media.
Welcome to Earth Eats, a show of real food and green living. I'm Annie Corrigan.
You know, they live in a firehouse 24/7, so they eat their meals here. So if they want to make salsas or any kind of chilies or anything like that, they've got fresh vegetables, know how to go to the store to get them. They got them right outside their back door.
That's Roger Kerr, chief of the City of Bloomington Fire Department. Thanks to the two raised garden beds in the station's side yard, the firefighters have been using the freshest of produce to make salsa and chilies. We speak with Kerr and the mastermind behind this pop-up garden, Farrell Johnson. We've got hot food and peppers on the brain today. Chef Daniel Orr makes a pickled pepper relish, and he visits with the local chili farmer to learn about some of the lesser-known varieties of chilies she grows. And before that, we get an update on how the drought is affecting farmers in the Arkansas River Basin. That's all just ahead on Earth Eats. We start off every program with a look at the news headlines from across the food world. Mia Partlow is here with us. Good to see you.
Hey, Annie. Four stories from this week's news. Drought-stricken farmers got some relief when the feds said they would buy up to $170 million worth of pork, lamb, chicken, and catfish. The meat will go towards stocking food banks and bolstering food nutrition programs. The problem is the feed. Corn prices have risen 23% this summer, which has made feed prices go through the roof. And thanks to the drought, pastures are bare. As a result, livestock farmers have been selling off their animals. The USDA reported this year's cattle inventory is the lowest it's been since the agency began keeping track in 1973. Drought conditions across Indiana may be lessening, however minimally. The weekly U.S. Drought Monitor report shows that almost 17% of the state is listed as experiencing exceptional drought. That's an 8-point drop from last week. According to an article published this month in the journal Pediatrics, kids experienced less weight gain in states with stronger regulations on the sale of snacks and sugary drinks in schools than those living in states with weaker or no regulations. The study tracked weight changes over a 4-year period for 6,300 students in 40 states. While the study's authors couldn't determine causation, they argued that the results favor adoption of stricter food regulations in schools. This is the first national study of its kind to find a link between laws regulating school food and childhood obesity. 12 states have obesity rates over 30%. That's according to analysis of 2011 data by the Centers for Disease Control. Indiana is one of the 12 states with an obesity rate over 30%. Mississippi had the highest obesity rate at 34.9%, while Colorado had the lowest at 20.7%. And Greek-style yogurt is a hot food trend these days, and New York lawmakers have taken notice. New York Governor Andrew Cuomo held a yogurt summit to discuss ways to grow the state's yogurt industry. Ideas included encouraging small farmers to increase their herds by lessening environmental regulations. Yogurt seems to be on the rise in New York with or without help from lawmakers. The state currently has 29 yogurt plants, up from 14 in the year 2000. No environmental groups were invited to the Yogurt Summit. Keep tabs on the foodie news happenings all week by following us on Twitter and liking us on Facebook. Join the conversation by searching for Earth Eats.
Check out the website, too, where you can find news stories, recipes, how-to posts, and interviews. Find us at eartheats.org. Mia Partlow, always a pleasure.
See you next week.
Drought has spread across a wide swath of the country, but all along the Arkansas River, drought has been torching crops, depressing tourism, and threatening municipal water supplies for months. Our story, from Frank Morris, reporting for Harvest Public Media, begins where the drought does, at Arkansas's headwaters, high in the Rocky Mountains of Colorado, and follows the river to its demise on the sun-baked Kansas prairie.
The Arkansas River starts here, about 10 miles north of Leadville, as a trickle, running off some of the highest peaks in the continental United States.
11,002. Yep. And it's all downhill from here.
Gary Hanks is water commissioner up here. He's an affable, gray-haired fellow, retired school teacher, who's now in charge of a precious commodity, one that comes down from the mountains, normally.
You would see some snow, especially the higher up, you would see snow-capped peaks and water rushing down.
And this year's just kind of dribbling down.
Yeah, it's not even dribbling down. I can't see any right now.
And the drought intensifies just downstream.
So I'm going to take this pipe wrench, and I'm going to shut this guy off.
Hanks and I have come to a head gate, two big steel valves set in concrete at a bend in this rocky trout stream. One's already closed. Now they both are. And a rancher downstream is out of luck.
He wasn't getting very much to start with. Now he's not going to get any.
Because every drop of water in this river is spoken for. And just downstream from here, it's used mainly for tourism, fishing, and rafting.
Dig it in, friends. Dig it in. 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 Bump! Nice job!
Andy Nindis is guiding a rubber raft full of tourists in orange helmets through Royal Gorge, where the Arkansas River is cut through 1,000 feet of pink granite. He runs Echo Canyon, a big outfitter.
And that was Wall Slammer.
Rafting is the summertime of skiing when you're talking about Colorado.
Ford Two Heart?
Rafting's big business on the Arkansas, and business is down. Nindis blames the forest fires more than the water levels, but the river is low.
So here we have the South Canyon Ditch, and just downstream in a moment we have the hydraulic ditch, and essentially the Arkansas River is just a little bit smaller right now.
Wow, Ford Hard, Ford Hard. And I am probably going to have to get out and push. Ford Hard, let's keep going hard, hard.
Sorry, all the guys. Water in the river is allocated based on seniority. The older the water claim, the higher the priority. Canyon City, at the mouth of the Royal Gorge, where the river slows and sets off across the plains, holds one of the best claims. But even here, Bob Hartzman with the Municipal Water Department worries that their river water will soon be cut off.
Our water rights have never been called out. That just shows you how things have changed over these last 100 years.
When the call does come, it'll be from 50 miles downstream near Avondale, Colorado, where agriculture rules.
Skvass! You see cows that are starting to trot and run towards us?
They're in a hurry.
Dan Henrich, standing here in a faded cowboy hat and freshly won rodeo belt buckle, runs Longhorn cattle out here on the wide open plains just east of the Rockies. It's desert dry normally, and this year's been doubly arid and brutally hot. Pale brown, sun-broiled scrublands surround this valley, yet this pasture is green. Fields of thirsty watermelon and corn flourish a few miles away, all thanks to the river.
We are standing at the confluence or the head gates of the Highline Canal on the Arkansas River.
Here, most of what's left of the Arkansas River spills into rusty steel gates and pours down a straight, grass-lined canal. The Highline holds a very old claim and is still running strong. But most irrigation canals are dry, leaving miles and miles of crops to wither.
This corn right here is dead. And you can see by the cracks in the ground how dry it is.
Travel 100 miles east down the river and you'll find Dale Mock, who runs a big farming and cattle operation on the scorched plains of Lamar, Colorado. The canal that four generations of his family have relied on for irrigation dried up last month.
The Fort Lyon Canal is a canal that started in 1860. This is the first time that we went to zero before the 4th of July. That's just something that's just in 152 years has never happened.
Mock will salvage much of this year's corn crop, chopping it up for cattle feed. But he says the drought shows just how tenuous farming is on the Arkansas River in eastern Colorado.
My water comes from 200 miles away on top of a mountain down a dirt ditch to get to my farm. When water gets short, that's not very economical. And so the guy irrigating out of the Arkansas River, his days are numbered.
On east another 70 miles, and the Arkansas has crossed into Kansas, where it's spelled the same but pronounced differently. Standing down here just south of Lake in Kansas, under a bridge that purports to span the Arkansas River. However, there's no river down here, not even a hint of water. Just dry sand stretching for miles. And there's a rotting deer carcass. A couple of guys shooting guns. Jaron Bell here and his friend are both 16, Lakin boys.
Does it ever seem kind of depressing that there's no water in this river?
Sometimes. It'd be nice to come down here and play in it when it's hot.
It's hot today.
Yeah.
Heat has been a major factor in this drought. June out here was the hottest on record, and the searing temps haven't abated at all this month. They've killed more than just row crops. Even tough native grasses, the ones naturally adapted to this harsh climate, are dying. That starves beef cattle and ranches here of their primary nourishment and upends an ancient business model practiced for generations by Southwest Kansas ranchers.
My name is Nathan Pike, and we're located 10 miles south of Mineola in the grass country.
Ranch life seems to agree with Nate Pike. He's rough and spry despite a host of maladies and serious injuries over his 78 years. He's lived and raised cattle on the squinty, low hills here since the Dust Bowl.
Well, I was born in a drought, and I've been through several. But this one is probably the most damaging one I've seen. I've never seen buffalo grass die. And it has.
Empty rolling prairie stretches for miles in all directions from a rise on Pike's ranch, where he kneels to touch a sea of stubby, burnt grass, dried almost to the shade of his straw cowboy hat.
You can see what we're up against. This old stuff is no good at all, and we're in a fire hazard.
Pike had to sell off the bulk of his cattle. He couldn't feed them. He's got fewer now than at any time in the last 50 years. And since he sold, cattle prices have gone up. As for what that means for his future or for rebuilding the family cattle operation?
We don't know. We got to get some rain. That's what we got to get.
But there's no rain in the immediate forecast, just parching triple-digit highs as the worst drought in memory along the Arkansas River Basin intensifies. Frank Morris, Harvest Public Media.
Hear more stories from the reporting team at Harvest Public Media on their website, harvestpublicmedia.org. To the kitchen now. The harvest from your home garden might be a little sparse this year, thanks to the drought. But Chef Daniel Orr urges you to still look to the future. Preserving the stuff you grow now will make the cold months so much tastier.
Well, you know, it gets to be that time of year where you have too many tomatoes, too many peppers, too many zucchini. And a great thing to do is to be able to taste those flavors all winter long. We've talked a lot about saving flavors and a way to stay local even during the winter. And one of the things you can do is make a wonderful relish. So that's what we're going to do today.
Excellent.
Get this stove started, and basically, we're just going to dump a bunch of stuff in a pot and let it cook. So we've got some wonderful red and yellow peppers. We've got some garlic, about a clove and a half. I've got one nice big scotch bonnet or habanero.
That is spicy.
But this is the key you're going to learn today in this recipe, is if you leave this whole, it's not going to make the food spicy. It's going to give flavor, but it won't give heat. These will still give a little bit of heat. These are the jalapenos. So if you want to make a pot of rice or a stew, just pop the whole habanero in there without cutting it, let it simmer, and then you can take it out and serve it on the side. So then you can just, if you want to make your food hotter or spicier, you can add some of that. So that's the little trick today. We're going to throw that in there whole. Throw in our jalapenos, some red onions, and we're going to give this a stir. And you can see the colors here.
It's beautiful.
I mean, it looks like Carnival in Rio, you know? I mean, it's just very, very playful, nice colors, like a festival of flavors and aromas. Now, to make this into a chutney, we're going to add our sugar. And for this amount, we're going to add about a half to two-thirds of a cup. And then about a cup of cider vinegar, or today I'm going to use some raspberry vinegar. This is some homemade raspberry vinegar, and we're going to use some of that today. So you want to use one of your sweeter vinegars.
How'd you make that vinegar?
Well, what we do is I take the purple basil leaves, and we pour white vinegar over the purple basil leaves. That gives it that nice color. And then we let that cool down, and then we drop the raspberries in there. And we put just a little bit of raspberry liqueur in there, just to give it a touch of sweetness. So that's that. To this, we're going to add A little salt, maybe about a teaspoon. We can always add more later if we want. And we're going to crush some peppercorns. Okay, to crush peppercorns, what I like to do is just put them out on the counter. And then we're going to take a pan.
This is a very high-tech method.
Yeah. And just press that down so we get a nice coarse crack on that. And that's, you know, it looks kind of like a butcher's grind. And that's going to give us little bites of pepperiness in our chutney. So what we want to do is just cook this, bring it down. Then we'll strain it off. We'll reduce the liquids till it's a real thick syrup. Toss them back together. And then we can refrigerate it until we want to use it. Great on hot dogs, sausages, as an accompaniment with pork steak, any kind of grilled item. Good in omelets as well.
See photos of this colorful relish on our website. Leave a comment with how you like to serve it. That omelet idea sounds really good to me. If you're hot on the idea of preserving the harvest from your garden, check out our recipes for pickled peppers, pickled asparagus, even pickled watermelon rind. Get your creative juices flowing at eartheats.org. Coming up, more peppers.
When I first started out, it was more the standards. People were looking for poblanos and jalapenos and serranos, which are all good. But I'd say the real change has been the chihuahuas and the Peruvian chilies.
That's the chili woman, Susan Wellsand. She says consumers these days are branching out and trying some out-of-the-ordinary chilies. Daniel Orr visits her farm to pick through her 1,600 varieties of peppers. Stay with us.
Production support for Earth Eats comes from Blooming Foods, fresh local organic food with delis at all three locations and a garden center on East 3rd Street, bloomingfoods.coop, and Touchstone Wellness, providers of therapeutic massage and yoga instruction, offering a variety of healing massage styles and yoga levels at the corner of Buick Cadillac Boulevard and Auto Mall Road, one block east of College Mall Road. Touchstone Wellness Massage and Yoga, 812-337-3529 or 33RELAX.
Welcome back to Earth Eats. I'm Annie Corrigan. Have you ever wondered why folks who live in hot climates tend to love spicy foods? Well, let's think about it. Spicy foods heat up the body, which can cool you off by bringing your body temperature closer to the temperature of the air around you. Spicy foods also induce sweating, which cools the body off as well. This summer, the Midwest has often felt like a completely different climate zone at times. As a result, Chef Daniel Orr is embracing spicy foods, specifically chili peppers. He visited the farm from which he sources some of the chilies he uses in his restaurant.
All right, well, here we go. I want to just ask you first to say your name and to spell it, please.
Susan Wellsand, Wellsand.
Susan has been growing chilies for 20 years. Her customers include not only local folks who stop by her farm or shop at the area farmers market, but chili lovers in every one of the lower 48 states. Hawaii actually doesn't permit her to ship there, and apparently the cost of shipping one chili plant to Alaska is more expensive than the plant itself, so she just doesn't do it. As her business has expanded over the years, she's noticed one significant change: the education of the consumer.
People are real specific about exact peppers that they want that have unique flavors to them. When I first started out, it was more the standards. People were looking for poblanos and jalapenos and serranos, which are all good. But I'd say the real change has been the chihuahuas and the Peruvian chilies.
And how long does it take from planting the seed to harvesting, you know, in July and August?
Depends on the specific type of chilies. I start sowing in my germination greenhouse mid-February, and I don't plant until June. I like the soil to be real warm. So after I plant, then I could be harvesting chilies late July, early August, and all the way till we have a frost.
Right. What are some keys that, you know, somebody who's not grown a lot of different things, what is particular to the chili plant that might make a difference? You said a warm soil when you plant it.
They're not fussy. Water real well when you plant them, and that's about it. Last year when we had the drought, I actually never watered the chilies, and I had good harvest.
I've heard that the drier the season, the hotter the chilies. Is that true?
It's true. When the plants get stressed from lack of water, it'll increase the capsaicin that's in the chilies and make them hotter.
All right.
Some people do it on purpose.
Uh-huh. All right. Well, let's go to the greenhouse. I'll follow you.
All righty.
I see you have a lot of poke growing around. Do you ever eat that?
No, but I like it as a beneficial weed. It'll draw Japanese beetles.
So the Japanese beetles will go to the poke weed instead of some of your other...
They'll leave the tomatoes and things like that alone.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Her 24x50 greenhouse in Bloomington, Indiana holds over 1,600 varieties of chilies.
The chilies are all very different in their size and their growing habits. Some will be bushy, some will have big, fat, curly leaves. These right here are Chaco, a wild variety from the forest of Argentina. And they may look all tiny, but they will grow into huge bushes just loaded with little red pea-shaped chilies. We should go back to the chihuacles, the mole chilies. My chilies are all alphabetical. It's easiest
okay.
for me. That's how I plant. Makes everything really easy to find. So over here you see the chihuacle negro, which is the black from black mole, chihuacle amarillo for the yellow Oaxacan mole, and chihuacle rojos. Super popular.
What is your favorite chili?
My favorite chili is the gusano, Arvivi gusano. It's from Bolivia, and it's a little white chili, very hot, but with fantastic flavor.
So it has a real perfume to it as well.
Oh, yeah.
Because I remember when I lived in the Caribbean, you know, you smell those habaneros and they call flavor peppers and different peppers.
I have several varieties of sweet habaneros that have that fruity aroma and that fruity taste. And when you break them open, it's just a perfume that scents your whole kitchen. And if you don't want the heat and you want the flavor, those are a good choice. And I also use those when I'm cooking for kids.
All right. Well, I'm glad I got out here finally after 5 years. I hadn't been out to your place. So thanks for showing me around, Susan.
Thanks for coming.
And then I'll pick up some chilies and I'm heading down to our farm, actually.
Chilies aren't the only things growing in a pair of raised beds outside the downtown Bloomington Fire Department. Tomatoes, lots and lots of tomatoes.
Yeah, well, you think of a firehouse and you think of things like chili and salsa and kind of spicy foods and good pasta sauces. It's a really nice combination of tomatoes. You see these really healthy, big globe tomatoes. If we come around this way, we've got some cucumbers. We've got lots of beautiful big jalapeno plants, and they're coming on, and these are mean. I had one of these the other day, Farrell brought me, and it just bit me back. So some lettuce growing along the edge here. A lot of times you want to grow your tender vegetables like lettuce in the shade, especially during these hot days. So you can either have the tomatoes growing up and have them growing under there. You could have trellised cucumbers and have your lettuce growing underneath there. Got a few beets, some radishes, and then this is what I call New Zealand spinach. It's a trailing spinach, really, really tasty. You want to try some?
Yeah, definitely.
Farrell Johnson is the gardener responsible for installing this plot at the fire station. He's also the owner-operator of Abundant Harvest Farms. He's installed raised beds like these at other locations around town, including the Harmony School and the Southside Recycling Center. In addition to spreading the good word about organic gardening, Johnson uses these raised beds as advertisement for his organic plant food and soil amendment. He says if you follow his recipe, anyone can create healthy, living soil in which to grow food.
Yeah, the soil situation is we use the native clay and then we bring in certain percentages of compost and sand, basically a soil optimization method that anyone can really do. And that's what we're trying to demonstrate here is that when you properly organize and set up the bed, you're going to have a lot more success, and success will keep people interested.
The firefighters have been enjoying the harvest in their daily meals. That's according to Roger Kerr, chief of the City of Bloomington Fire Department. In fact, he said he plucked some tomatoes out of the garden for his breakfast this morning.
Think of it like he was at home. It's just like an extended family. So, you know, breakfast, usually they kind of bring their own stuff. Lunch is kind of light because we're working. It's hot outside. But then at supper time, it can range anything from a sandwich all the way up to, you know, a full-blown Thanksgiving meal. So just whatever the thoughts of the day are. But it's nice to be able to walk out and have your fresh vegetables right here and not have to go get them at a grocery store.
Well, let's talk about this specific setup. So we've got two raised beds here, and the first thing that I notice is that there is no tree cover, so you probably get a lot of full sun for the majority of the day.
Yeah, and that's kind of why we chose it. And also, with the raised beds, we wanted to position them close to a water source, and that was one of the obvious benefits of the fire department. It's what they do best. When I approached Chief Kerr, and he could guarantee that they could keep it watered every other day, we knew it was going to be a perfect fit.
So do you have some sort of like list in the firehouse?
Who's actually just inside the door. There's a calendar on the wall. Somebody is comes out in the morning when they first get here. Shift changes at 7, so we do all of our routine maintenance and cleaned up usually from 7 to 8. So somebody's taking that on themselves in the mornings. They came out, they water it, they just put their initials on the counter and check it so that we know it's been done. And it's been a great asset. It's kind of caught on and everybody has bought into it.
Try that at home, you know. Have a checkoff list and have the whole family out there working.
Okay, so Chef, I want you to go through these beds and get a list of ingredients and come up with a dish that the firefighters can make themselves.
Well, I'm thinking right now, the perfect thing if I was going to get up in the morning and I had this in my backyard is an omelet. You have this beautiful spinach, which is vine spinach. It's very kind of succulent. It's more succulent than a regular spinach. So you could chop that up with some basil and some tomatoes. Just make your omelet, put that stuff in the center of it, fold it over, and you have a healthy, great way to start breakfast. And then you can go on into different meals. I mean, a great pasta sauce with the tomatoes and basil. You could throw in some of the beet greens in a dish, cook all that together and serve it over pasta. It's simple, it's easy. If you want to have a little fire in your mouth at the firehouse, throw in some chilies.
The chef was saying, actually, that the peppers are especially hot. Have you tried one?
They have found that out. I'm not a big pepper fan and a hot fan, but I have heard them say at the table that the peppers are hot. So if you're going to eat them, be prepared.
See photos of this amazing garden by connecting with Farrell Johnson on Facebook. Just search for Abundant Harvest Farms. Pop on over to our website and read interviews, find recipes, and add your two cents to the conversation. Your online foodie destination is eartheats.org.
Production support for Earth Eats comes from Blooming Foods. Fresh, local, organic food with delis at all three locations and a garden center on East 3rd Street. bloomingfoods.coop, and Touchstone Wellness, providers of therapeutic massage and yoga instruction, offering a variety of healing massage styles and yoga levels at the corner of Buick Cadillac Boulevard and Auto Mall Road, one block east of College Mall Road. Touchstone Wellness, massage and yoga, more at touchstonewellness.com. Earth Eats is a production of WFIU and Indiana Public Media.
Next week on Earth Eats, we talk barbecue. We visit with the master barbecuer, Chris Marks, to find out how he can tell a rib has been perfectly cooked. What he says might actually surprise you. Thanks for listening today. I'm Annie Corrigan.